Hey everyone, and welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. I'm your guest, Bridget Danner, and my guest today is Dr. Véronique Desaunier. You can tell she is French-Canadian originally, living in the United States. She is better known as Dr. V, and she has maintained successful practices in the wellness field since 1979. Because of her passion for health and wellness, Dr. V undertook extensive studies in various fields of energy medicine, specializing in chiropractic, bioenergetics, meridian stress analysis, homeopathy, and digital thermography. Dr. V brings a unique approach to health and wellness. After 30 years in active practice, she decided to retire, so to speak, and devote her time sharing her personal, non-toxic healing journey with breast cancer. Her years of experience and research have culminated as the Seven Essentials, a step-by-step coaching program. Dr. V is a number one best-selling author and has a number one best-selling book on Amazon, Heal Breast Cancer Naturally. Her website and her personal healing journey have touched the lives of thousands of women around the globe. So welcome, Dr. V.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. I have been reading your story and your history. I'm just excited to get to know you a little bit over the next hour or so. And, yeah, let's start at the beginning. So you are French-Canadian. You were raised in South Central Canada, which actually I guess I didn't know how far west, so to speak, French-Canadian communities went. So it sounds like you were, you know, not in Eastern Canada, more in Central Canada. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And actually, where I grew up, it is still the largest French community west of Quebec and Eastern Canada. So, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So French environment.
Okay. What's the name of the town?
I grew up in Saint Boniface in the province of Manitoba.
Okay, interesting. Cool. Yeah, my mother is from Montreal, so I'm here always curious to learn a little bit more about about my geography. So you grew up somewhat in poor health. You know, you had kind of a processed food diet. And in your teenage years, you were introduced to chiropractics and herbal medicine, and you were very excited about it. And then it sounds like you kind of had some fortunate turn of events, and you know, you had some help and moxie to go to college in chiropractics at the Life College in Georgia. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes, I was introduced to chiropractic at 16. My chiropractor was giving a lecture on health and wellness, and it was one of those light bulb moments where I knew in my gut that that's what I wanted to do. So a few years later, I left a little French-Canadian community and moved to Marietta, Georgia, near Atlanta, and graduated as a chiropractor and started sharing my message of wellness with the world.
Yeah, you've got a long practice and a long experience. And, you know, we're going to talk today about breast cancer and your experience with breast cancer. It sounds like your first personal experience with cancer was with your father, who was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in 1983. And it sounds like, you know, at the time you were still pretty new out of school. You know, you didn't have all these tools yet. I think you even said, you know, we didn't have the internet yet. It wasn't as easy to find tools and find, you know, find out information. Tell us more about what sparked for you then in your research into cancer.
Well, my father was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and he was basically written off and sent home to die, which he did in about 6 weeks. And I just remember my frustration and my anguish with those doctors and just, you know, asking them, surely there's something you can do for my father. I mean, give him hope, give him something, but don't just send him home to die. So, you know, they didn't have any answers, so I just took it upon myself and started doing some research, went to the library, like you said, no internet back then, and started uncovering things that were just phenomenal, and I began to realize that, yes, there were things that could be done to heal cancer. So I went back into my practice and applied these principles and started, you know, adding naturopathy, homeopathy, bioenergetic testing, you know, all these different things in my practice, and was seeing amazing turnarounds with people with various forms of cancer or MS. And autoimmune diseases, you know, like rheumatoid arthritis going into remission and things like that. And so it was, you know, it was that transformation that really opened up my eyes into how the body worked and how, you know, phenomenal the healing process is if we give it what it needs to support the healing.
Okay, so you were just kind of expanding your own toolbox and, you know, getting beyond, you know, the structure and more of the energetics of the body, really, really great. And then you said in 1993, your mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. It sounds like she had some conventional treatment, but she also came to you, which is great, for help. So tell me what, at that point in 93, what kind of tools were you using and helping her with?
Well, she came to visit from Canada, and she had had a lumpectomy and radiation, and, you know, the radiation literally burned her breast, and it was blistered and red hot until the day she died, really, years and years later. But she, you know, she followed my anti-cancer protocol, took her drops, and, you know, she didn't exactly change her diet 100%, but she did the best that she could, and she never had a problem with breast cancer again.
Wow, that's really amazing. And it must have been so satisfying for you to have your turn to you. That's awesome. And then you said in 2004, I think you said you were taking a shower and you found a lump and you were shocked because here you were, you know, you knew a lot about cancer, you were having good habits, you know, you were an energized practitioner. Take us through what started you on your own personal journey here with cancer.
Well, it was, you know, a typical morning, and I, you know, was headed to work, jumped in the shower, and felt that dreaded lump in my left breast. And I innately knew, my gut told me, I knew it wasn't a benign cyst. And so, you know, it was another big turning point in my life where, you know, I really had to ask myself, you know, how could somebody like me develop breast cancer? I mean, here I was, Dr. V, you know, super doc, helping all these other people, but here I am, you know, faced with that same situation. So, again, a lot of research, a lot of soul searching, trying to understand what pieces of the puzzle that I had missed, because I thought I was doing everything right. I mean, I ate organic before organic was in style. I had home births. I breastfed all my children. I was under chiropractic care, had massage. I exercised. I took supplements, herbs. You know, I thought I was doing everything right. But I came to realize that there were several pieces of the puzzle that I was missing, which that's what led me to create what I call the seven essentials, you know, seven basic principles and steps that if you follow, you never have to fear cancer or any dis-ease for that matter.
Okay. So, yeah, I want to talk more about the book. I told you offline, I haven't finished the book, but I've really been enjoying it. I think it's inspiring and bold, but also really well backed up, which I appreciate. So before we get into there, you know, there might be some skeptics listening, you know, oh, you know, breast cancer is in my family, I can't avoid it, or, you know, this kind of thing. So what are some myths we can bust to kind of open our minds to the possibilities of preventing and healing breast cancer?
Well, there's several of them, but I like to start with one that really has women in fear, and that is that your hormones cause cancer. You know, we've been led to believe by the traditional medical system that simply because the cancer cell may have, you know, estrogen or progesterone positive receptors, that it's your hormones that are causing cancer. However, if our hormones cause cancer, then every 20-year-old on this planet would be walking around with cancer. So, you know, what is it then that's driving that extra hormone push, the estrogen and progesterone? Well, if you look at our environment and all the chemicals that we're exposed to, a lot of them are estrogen mimickers, or they, you know, they mimic estrogen in the body. And so pesticides, herbicides, plastics, you know, PVA from plastics will mimic estrogen in the body and stimulate estrogen. Aluminum from antiperspirants is also what we call a metalloestrogen. It mimics and stimulates estrogen production. The fillings in your teeth, such as that contain mercury, you know, the amalgams, those stimulate estrogen. So, yes, our bodies are bombarded by false estrogens that are, you know, really making it difficult for our body to process all these estrogens. So, secondly, if your body is not metabolizing or methylating estrogens properly, or methylating means breaking them down into metabolites that are, you know, not aggressive, and they're not being secreted and excreted from the body properly, then yes, there will be a recirculation of the more aggressive estrogen, which can lead to some problems. So the key is, then, number one, is to avoid your exposure to all these false estrogens. And secondly, make sure you support your body to methylate or break down these estrogens properly by, you know, adding extra cruciferous vegetables, using supplements like DIM and I3C, which are basically extracts from the cruciferous vegetables.
Okay. I love that you're already just diving into some specific things. It's really, I think my listeners appreciate that. So, yeah, I think we're all aware of some of the estrogens, you know, from plastics or, you know, in meats and conventionally raised meats, but you're also mentioning, you know, amalgams and, you know, there's sort of hidden sources, so to speak, even in like body products and makeup. So yeah, you talk in the book about excess hormones, and you just got into methylation a little bit. What are some of the other, you know, kind of triggers and causes, so to speak, to encourage our genes to mutate and to not be able, for our bodies to be able to kind of clean up unhealthy cells?
Well, when we look at our environment, there's so many reasons that can cause that. I mean, we live in a toxic world. I mean, we have to admit that. We can't live in a bubble. So, you know, one of the essentials that I talk about is essential number two, is to reduce your toxic exposure. You know, and how do you do that? Well, you make informed decisions about the type of lawn fertilizers and things you use around your home. You make informed decisions about what you have inside your home. Just look under your cabinet, and, you know, under the sink or in the bathroom, and you know, the average household has over 1,000 toxic chemicals in their home. So making, you know, decisions that will reduce your toxic exposure to chemicals that cause, you know, DNA damage. Look at what you put on your skin, because anything you put on your skin is absorbed into the body. And then, of course, you know, look at what you're putting into your body. I mean, some of the triggers there can be everything from, you know, hydrogenated fats and oils to sugars to, you know, charred meats and, you know, just all kinds of processed foods. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that can really drive DNA damage if we're not careful.
Okay, great. And I want to ask you next more about food. But before I do that, I want to kind of share with our listening community that, you know, I really encourage a step-by-step, little-by-little approach. You know, maybe not if you've just got a diagnosis or there's some big trigger. If you're welcome to do as much as you want. But it's hard to do everything at once. So, you know, take step-by-step. You know, buy the book. I'll tell you more about the book at the end. And then just say, okay, well, I'm doing good in this category. You know, I've changed my cleaning products, but perhaps I haven't really looked at my makeup yet. And that's the thing I'm going to do next, is look at my makeup and figure out what's in that and maybe some better options. So, yeah, I like the idea of, you know, prevention doesn't have to be this daunting thing. It can be just making little changes and just continuing to you know, maximize our health and decrease the toxins step by step. Does that sound good to you, Dr. V?
Absolutely. That's why I created the 7-step program, to break it down, because so many women, I mean, that's the biggest complaint that I hear from women, and that's why I started doing my coaching program, is because they're, you know, they're frustrated, they're confused, they're overwhelmed by all the information out there, and, you know, they don't know where to start.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of education. You know, I have a podcast, and, you know, you probably got lots of resources to it. But at the same time, our emotions can come up when we're trying to make changes in our health and habits, and that's why it's so important, I think, to have a guide or several guides to help you and just, you know, give you that community and emotional support. So you mentioned a few things about food, hydrogenated oils and sugar, charred meat. Do you want to list off a few more cancer-triggering foods?
Well, if you just look at the SAD, the standard American diet, you know, you can get a pretty good idea. Pretty much anything that's processed, anything that is GMO, you know, genetically modified foods, are extremely inflammatory and very toxic to the body and to your immune system. Packaged foods, you know, the pesticides and herbicides that are on regular produce. You know, eating organic is almost a must nowadays, because so many of the produce is burdened and laden with cancer-causing chemicals. And, you know, in worst-case scenario, if you can't eat the organic foods, then at least, you know, peel them and wash them very carefully. But, you know, just the traditional foods that the average person eats is basically pretty detrimental to your health.
Yeah. Can you talk to me a little bit more, because I'm still learning about this one. Let me see if I can pronounce it. Acrylamides. I'm just new to learning about these. It's funny. I read it in your book. I had just read it somewhere, and, you know, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I read it in your book, and I was like, huh, this is something I should know about. Can you share a bit more about those?
Yeah, well, if you love potato chips or anything that's, you know, fried or heated at a very high temperature, basically, there was a study done, and I forget all the details, but it's in my book, but there was a study done, I think it's called the Heat Tox Project, where they looked at commercialized food that were cooked at very high temperatures and the resultant chemicals as a result of it. And there's actually a proposal to put a warning on foods like potato chips, because they have such high levels of this toxic chemical called acrylamide that literally drives cancers and all kinds of cancers. And so, you know, whether or not anything happens with that, we'll see. But it's, you know, just to be aware that anything that is cooked at a very high temperature on a commercial level is going to have some serious byproducts that are very, very toxic.
Yeah, I am just learning this, and I'm really glad to be learning it. I wouldn't say I eat potato chips every day, but, you know, if I go to a party, I might eat potato chips, or if I'm, you know, making Mexican food, I might buy corn chips or something. So it really struck me that I might need to rethink this. I have your book, the page handy, so I'll just read the little quote here. One of the chemicals which especially caught their attention is called acrylamide. Acrylamide is so toxic and carcinogenic that the EPA has set a maximum contaminant level goal at zero, but an allowable threshold of 0.2 micrograms per day. So how much are in your favorite potato chips? The Environmental Law Foundation found that some potato chips had levels as high as 910 times the allowable threshold. So, wow. So even, you know, kind of our more, you know, conventional regulatory bodies like the EPA recognize that that's dangerous, but yeah, who knows, you know, why that's not not a label yet, but, you know, I think it's just important to know there's a lot of things that we sort of take for granted as being safe, that, you know, that we need to learn more about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, I kind of got geeked out on that for a minute. But tell us more about the big picture. So we talked about a few things, the food and environmental triggers. Can you tell us more about your seven essentials or your seven steps?
Sure. So essential number one is to let food be your medicine and really looking at food as your prescription for health, because you have a choice. What you put into your body either feeds your body and your cells or it feeds the cancer. And, you know, if you look at what you're putting into your body, you know, then you can make a more informed decision. I'm often asked, is there, you know, an anti-cancer diet that I recommend? Well, it really varies depending on the metabolic type and the blood type and the, you know, type of cancer people have or what their goals are. But basically, in a nutshell, if you can eat 80% raw and 80% organic, then you're moving, 80% alkaline, then you're moving into the right direction. I mean, that's ultimately your goal. Number two we talked about, you know, is to reduce your toxic exposure, and there's, you know, various ways to do that. And you can also learn to detoxify your body with, you know, sweating, like saunas, coffee enemas, specific nutrients to help support the, you know, the organs of the liver and the colon and the kidneys. So, you know, reducing your toxic exposure is very important. Essential number three is to balance your energy. Now, a lot of people don't realize that we are 1/1,000,000,000th physical matter. The rest is all energy. So what you see in your body physically is only 1/1,000,000,000th of the picture. The rest of it is all energy, because your cells communicate to each other through, you know, photonic light. Your heart and your brain communicate with electrical energy. Your acupuncture meridian system runs on chi energy or life force. And so it's important to, you know, to keep that energy balanced. And we do that in several ways. Chiropractic care to make sure that your nerve system, your autonomic nerve system is working freely without interference. Acupuncture helps to reduce the interference of the life energy in the body. Balancing your hormones, you know, women especially, we know when our hormones aren't balanced that, you know, we don't feel balanced. And, you know, there's different ways to do that. And exercise is an important part of that. Sleep, if we don't get proper sleep, it actually turns off some cancer protective genes and it weakens our immune system and we don't detoxify properly. So, you know, balancing your energy is very important. So those are the first three.
Okay.
Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. So essential number four is to heal your emotional wounds. Now, that's a big one. It was a big one for me, one that I overlooked for a long period of time. I mean, I thought I had done enough therapy to last a lifetime, but obviously there were still some things that needed uncovering and some work to do. But, you know, what a lot of women don't realize is when they're going through a physical journey and healing their body, they have to address the emotional healing as well. Because if you don't learn to manage your stress, if you don't learn to become a happy person, if you're still stuck, you know, with some anger and some resentment, you know, your body's not going to heal. Because if you keep doing the things you've always done, you're going to get the same results. So it's really about healing, you know, the whole body, the emotions, the spirit, the mental, all that.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to mention before we move on to the next item that you have a study in your book about DNA and emotions and how there's some kind of study where they had the DNA in a vial and, you know, if there was, you know, the shouting and anger and negativity, they observed the DNA to actually, like, kind of shrink and coil and, I don't know, maybe fray was in there too. And I just thought that was so fascinating. And it was a good little reminder for me personally, you know, of the fact of of, you know, my own negative emotions on my body. You know, I have, for instance, this kind of energy robber in our lives right now that we're trying to get to exit. And I just realize every time, like, I react to that in this kind of angry or way, you know, it's just hurting myself. So, yeah, just to visualize that DNA, like, shrinking up really was helpful for me.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, it's just a big, you know, because our, I said it's a very big piece of the puzzle, because our emotional system, you know, the limbic center in the brain is attached to our pituitary and hypothalamus, which indirectly control our hormones and our immune system. So it's an important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of, at least for me, because I think some people can poo-poo, you know, the emotion, how emotions affect our health, you know, as if they're so separate. But when you do some of the observation on, you know, how is that affecting, you know, you can observe the brain, or you can observe, you know, the immune cell count, or observe the DNA and see, you know, yeah, there is a clear correlation. So I think that's a helpful piece. Okay, so number five, what you got for us?
Number five is to embrace biological dentistry. And biological dentistry basically is the dentistry that looks at your teeth as living entities that are connected to other parts of your body. They're not just, you know, separate entities that you can drill and poke. So if you have silver fillings or amalgams, these fillings are 50% mercury, and mercury is the most toxic element on the planet. And every time you chew, every time you drink something hot, it's actually releasing methylmercury vapors into your body, which is affecting your immune system and your nerve system. Then if you think about the root canal, if you have root canal, studies have shown us that women with breast cancer have one or more 92% of women who have breast cancer, have one or more root canals in their mouth. Now, what's the danger in a root canal? Well, imagine if you had an infected gallbladder or appendix, and instead of extracting it and pulling it out, they just kept injecting it with antibiotics and bleach and, you know, tried to really keep it separate from the rest of the body. Well, that's impossible, because no matter how aseptic they would try to make it, you would still get an infection. And same thing happens with your teeth. They can drill it out and try to fill it with, you know, very clean material, but in the end, it's a dead entity, and your body's innate wisdom is to reject that and to try to expel it. So there's, at the root of it, there's always a pocket of anaerobic bacteria that drip very unhealthy bacteria, toxins, into your system, which suppress your immune system. And then if that tooth, whether it's a root canal or an amalgam, is sitting on a meridian that's connected to your breast tissue, that will also cause some weakness in that area. So, for example, for women, if you count from the very center and you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, your fourth and fifth teeth on both sides on the top are directly connected to your breasts. So that's something of interest. And, you know, when I was in active practice and I used bioenergetic testing, I would have to say that 99% of the time, there was a correlation with a dental issue and a particular organ in the body.
And what was that statistic you said earlier, 90-some percent of women?
93% of women who have cancer, breast cancer, have one or more root canals. People in general, 98% of people who have cancer have one or more root canals.
Wow, really interesting. I'm just thinking of a client of mine who just had a root canal.
Mm-hmm.
I care about some of this stuff. We're actually going to have someone on the show in a couple of months to talk about holistic dentistry. So if you're interested to learn more, just kind of stay tuned, subscribe to the show so that you touch that next episode. It's something I talk about too in my fertility practice, because these kind of unidentified infections in the mouth are just a real drain on the body. So, yeah, I love that. I love that you're mentioning that. Okay, how about number six?
Number six is to repair your body with therapeutic plants and herbs. And, you know, it's very important for you, I think, that you mentioned that, and it's very important for me and for your audience to know that there are literally thousands of published studies that prove the power of natural medicine. You can go to the website pubmed.org, which is the United States Library, National Library of Medicine, and you can just put in the search bar, you know, vitamin C and cancer, or vitamin D and cancer, or whatever substance you want, and you will literally see hundreds and hundreds of published studies that prove the effectiveness of these natural substances. So, for example, if a woman is on a healing journey with breast cancer and she wants to do something less toxic than regular chemotherapy, I refer to certain herbs as an herbal form of chemotherapy, because that's what they do. They kill cancer cells without killing the healthy cells. An example of that is an herb called bloodroot. It has a compound in it called sanguinarene, and that sanguinarene literally kills cancer cells without affecting your healthy tissue. And so something as simple as bloodroot can have a huge impact if you're, you know, if you have cancer. Another example of that would be CBD, cannabis oil from hemp. And, you know, that particular plant compound has hundreds of studies done on it, and it's proven that it has many, many anti-cancer properties.
Okay. Yeah, you've got a great story about the bloodroot in your book, so I encourage people to get the book and hear more about it. And number seven, I think you have adopt very early detection. Is that right?
That's right. You know, that has to do with really keeping an edge and keeping a pulse on what's going on with your health. So a big mistake that I find for women, even though they've been cleared, quote-unquote, from their doctor, that they're cancer-free, or if they're just on a healing journey and they're just, you know, juicing and taking herbs, you know, they're not measuring the results. And measurable results is what counts. And so there's technology out there that can help you monitor your progress or really allow you to practice true prevention, because by the time a cancer, a lump or a bump is found or seen, it's taken 5 to 10 years for that to develop. With this kind of technology, you can find cancer when it's simply the size of a pinhead. And so an example of that would be thermography. Thermography cannot diagnose cancer, but what it can do is show you physiological changes that are going on in the breast or in the body. For example, if there's something developing in the breast, it's going to show up on a thermography scan as something very red and hot, because there's inflammation. Whenever there's a tumor formation or blood flow that's feeding the tumor, it's going to be warmer, and thus it's going to show up warmer on a thermography scan. Another tool that you can use are certain blood tests that unfortunately are not used by traditional medicine, and if they were, they would literally be saving millions of lives. But, you know, they're not in the cancer prevention business. So an example of a test of that is called Oncoblot, O-N-C-O-B-L-O-T. You can just go to my website, breastcancerconqueror.com, and just plug that in the search bar, and you'll see the information will come up on that. But that detects a protein called the ENOX2 protein that is secreted by cancer cells, and it can detect if you have cancer and where you have cancer, and it can detect 26 different types of cancers so far.
That's amazing. Wow. Yeah, definitely encourage people to go to the website or the book. And I wrote down the list of, you have quite a number of tests that can, maybe not, you know, you're giving one example that is very accurate, but others would just maybe suggest that you can be setting your body up for cancer, so to speak. Like if some of your blood markers of inflammation are quite high, or your thyroid is low, or your vitamin D is low, or your DHEAS is low, and these are some of the things I test in my practice for, you know, hormone health and that kind of thing. So I think it's just really interesting. You talk about 5 to 8 years ahead, the cancer is beginning to develop. Let me ask you a question. You know, I have some women in my practice who are younger, like, you know, 29, and then I have women who are, you know, 55. I'm wondering if you have any advice for different age groups as far as, I guess, even just kind of a mental, like, framework that I can share with my clients at different ages to sort of inspire them to work on prevention more, if that makes sense.
You mean as far as like premenopausal or postmenopausal or?
Yeah. And knowing that many of these things take years to develop, I would love to be able to just inspire women of different age groups on what they can do at their age to take steps. I know it's all in your book, but I might not be asking this in the most eloquent way, but I guess maybe your experience working with women with different ages and maybe what you found has helped inspire them to take some positive action.
Well, I think, you know, women from the, you know, 20 to 40 year range, you know, most of them are dealing with their body being out of balance hormonally anyway, and most of them are iodine deficient, and so a lot of them have thyroid and issues, and a lot of them are estrogen dominant. You know, there's that adrenal stress. And then there's the group of women that are premenopausal and kind of going, you know, they're in between. So they're struggling with those issues. And then there's the, you know, the menopausal women that have the issues after they have menopause, you know, the vaginal dryness, the no sleep, the sweats, the fatigue, all these things. And, you know, each part of their, you know, their life basically requires the same amount of diligence in that, you know, you want to monitor your hormones through saliva testing. You want to make sure your thyroid is getting proper nourishment. You know, exercise is an important part of keeping your hormones and your health in balance. So, you know, each aspect is a little different, but it still requires the same basic preventative steps.
That's a perfect answer. That really helped me out a lot. Because, long before you get a lump, which is what we want to avoid anyways, you may be feeling symptoms of fatigue or PMS or your skin's breaking out or you're developing a rash. And all these things are more or less caused by some of the same triggers for cancer, you know, inflammation, hormone imbalance, toxicity. So I think if I'm understanding you right, just managing your own health at your various stages of life is what's important.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's great. I love it. So, Dr. V, can you tell our listeners more about where they can find your book and other resources you have?
Yes. My website is breastcancerconqueror.com, and there you'll have all kinds of information through the newsletter and downloads, you know, audio downloads and of different interviews and pre-ebooks. My book can be found on the website, but it's also on healbreastcancernaturally.org. And, of course, you can find me on Facebook, breastcancerconqueror.com, and on Twitter as well.
Great, perfect. Thank you again so much. I really enjoyed the book and having you here, and hopefully have inspired some women to take just better all-around care of their health for prevention and hopefully learning a little bit more about cancer prevention today. So if you enjoyed this show, we encourage you to subscribe on iTunes or your Android podcast device. We're putting out the show now every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific. So if you're subscribed, they will be delivered right to your listening list. Appreciate having you listening. And Dr. V, thanks again.
Thanks so much, Bridget. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you sharing my message of hope with your audience.
Ah, yes. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.